I've heard this a thousand times. Well, I'm not a salesman. Okay, but you're in my office trying to convince me that you want this contract, or you really deserve a raise, or this merger is the best thing for me. You're not selling. What are you doing? Getting a manicure? No, we're all selling something to somebody all the time, including ourselves, our kids, our mates, our parents, and all of that. So, I hate to say this, but you're salesman, not being gender specific, but you are.
Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schuller.
The big question, how to sell without being salesy? Well, today I am joined by Stephen J. Manning, and we are going to dig into this really important topic. And I don't think it matters whether you are actually in sales, whether you are a CEO of a company, or you want to sell something to your wife, to your boss, to your employees. You are in sales. So I think first, let's get over the fact that this is not just for salespeople, but it will be very, very valuable to listen to this if you are a salesperson. So thank you for joining me, Steve.
Thank you.
Looking forward to digging into this. And it's such a great topic.
It's an awesome topic. Let us stipulate, like you said, that everybody's selling something to somebody all the time. It's a fact. When you wake up in the morning, you're selling yourself to get up and get going. And just like everything we do in life is to provoke a desired outcome in someone else. Sell something to somebody just to ourselves, cause them to do something. So, you know what? I've heard this a thousand times. Well, I'm not a salesman. Okay, but you're in my office trying to convince me that you want this contract, or you really deserve a raise, or this merger is the best thing for me. You're not selling. What are you doing? Getting a manicure? No, we're all selling something to somebody all the time, including ourselves, our kids, our mates, our parents, and all of that. So it's, yeah, I hate to say this, but you're salesman, not being gender specific, but you are. And by the way, gender specific, some of the most gifted salespeople I've ever met in my life happen to be women. There's some subtlety to some of the people I've met that is just amazing. But selling, oh, good God. I think I was selling when I first started to cry when I was born. Yeah, I was trying to sell my mom into feeding me. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all learn how to sell when we're children, don't we? When we want something from our parents, right? I mean, my daughter's always trying to sell me on the benefits of something that she wants. And I think that it's interesting as we sort of grow up, maybe we sort of some people kind of lose the ability to actually sell on an idea. But I don't know. I find, you know, if you're thinking about yourself and kind of what this is going to do for you when you're a salesperson, then you're probably in the wrong job, because it's not really about you, is it? It's about what you're going to do for the person who's buying, isn't it, really?
Well, by definition, is about the person buying, because you need to, if you're going to be successful in selling anything, product, brushes, cars, ideas, consulting work, nuclear fusion, whatever it is you're selling, it is imperative that you understand who you're selling to. You and I talk about the nut behind the wheel. You know, the most important part of driving an automobile is the nut behind the wheel. You have to understand what that nut does, what it does not do, what it really wants. You have to learn as much as you possibly can about the target of your effort. What is it they really want? What they need, wants, needs, desires. You can address most of those, can't satisfy them, but you got to address them. So you need to understand what are the touch points that are necessary to prevail. And remember, the person you're pitching understands you're pitching. And they are also there working their butts off to make a living, do whatever. They're more poised to say no than yes, because it's safer. It's easier to absorb the blows because you should have said yes then absorb the blows, and you said yes, and you should have said no. So you have to understand the sensitivity of the person you're dealing with. But, you know, it's an amazing thing when people walk in an environment and try to sell an idea, concept, whatever, shoes, and they lose the fact of their own humanity and the other guy. Remember, that person over there has the option to say no, just because. But if you present yourself, you're yourself, I'm doing a job, this is what I'm trying to do, the person is less poised to say no, because as you and I talk, in the back of their minds, they're thinking, what a bad day, I'm working very hard. They say, you know, but for the grace of God, I would be standing on the other side of the desk trying to convince me to buy something I may or may not want. And but for the grace of God, I would be doing that as hard as I could just to earn money to eat. So there's some piece of empathy that you can actually derive from the person you're trying to sell. Now, that goes contrary to every salesperson you go talk to, unless they really want to reflect on it. Of course, then you have to marry that with your ability to sell. And you talk about being pushy. I'm telling you that a vanilla pitch gets you a little chocolate sprinkles. If your pitch is vanilla and you don't have personality behind it, now personality is not big guy waving his arms, talking man on the moon. Personality meaning I know my stuff, and this is why I believe this is good for you. And by the way, it's also good for me. I'm wanting to make a sale. Oh, my God. How many people have told me, don't ever do that? Why? You mean the other guy doesn't know it's good for me to make a sale? Question is, what am I willing to do to make the sale? Okay, how do I'm not talking about prostitute yourself. Please buy from me. But here's a good reason for you to buy from me. And by the way, I've said this 1,000 times. Some in some really big boardrooms. And the reason, one of the other reasons you really need to do this, because my kids need new shoes. And yes, I'm sending my kids to private school, so I really need to make this deal. You know what I get? I get giggles and I get nods. Yeah, well, I feel the same way, says the other guy. So you know what? Don't be pushy. But there's ways to be pushy, which is obnoxious. And ways to say, you need to tell me, why is it you don't want to do this? I'd love to overcome your objections. Anybody else I should talk to? Who do I beat up? I can't beat up on you. I'm trying to convince you to buy, but is there somebody else I can beat up? It's so disarming because you are dealing in facts, truth, the obvious. Everybody gets it. You know, I don't know how to say this. You and I were talking about this. You have to have some degree in je ne sais quoi. I believe the not so little translations that you really have to be genuine in the process. It's very disarming when in the middle of a pitch, and remember, it's the process that people like or dislike, not the end goal. We all know how we're going to get there. It's the process is what makes it successful. In the middle of the speech, you look at the other guy or the other woman and say, you know, thank you for all great feedback, and this may not be for you. Just may not be for you. So let me give it up. And if you think we should come back at some point, your needs change, whatever, I am glad to get to be back. Oh, by the way, you say that when you think you're halfway there, because the other person will say, no, maybe it's not. By then, they had invested in you, invested in the process. They don't really want to let it go to waste. And you just find that the person who's about to say no to you is actually helping you to a yes. Isn't that great? So you don't walk in and you have 6 talking points. And you don't talk about yourself. He does not. She doesn't care about you. Cares about making a good deal. Talk about them. Every sales pitch I have ever made was 98% the client, 98% of my clients. And that's from Apple to Xerox. That's selling shoes, whatever the heck it is. I talk about them. I talk about their benefits, their competitors, their brethren. This is what I've learned. Help me learn more so I can service you. Oh, yeah, by the way, I really want to sell you this, but I need to know more. You know, so I people, don't be salesy. Are you kidding? That would be the epitome of being salesy, except it's a matter of style, which you have to blend with the right substance, understanding your client. Who are you pitching? What are their needs, wants, desires, insecurities, whatever it is they have? And how do they stack up the hierarchy of clients, the hierarchy of their businesses? The more I know about you, the better I can appeal to you at a level that's the most important for you. You don't fundamentally care about me. You don't want to hear me talk about how wonderful we are. You know, a very quick story. Some years ago, I was a kid working for a massive insurance company, and there was a moment in time where they were shifting or renewing contracts on mainframes. There are two competitors. There was IBM, because they were always there, and Honeywell, because they were also there. You can't beat these mainframe big businesses, insurance company. I mean, we ran all the contracts for the state of California, for example, within this insurance company. Anyway, Honeywell came in and presented what they did, how they did, how they're going to service and so on. I was the kid in the room. And our CEO was your basic 6'4" linebacker. Yeah. I got it. Okay. They leave. In comes IBM. The IBM people sit down and say, you know us because you do business with us. So can we just renew the contract? And the CEO, who was not particularly in the right mood, besides he kind of like, he was one of those guys, he said, now tell me why I'd want to go renew with you. And one of those people laid back and said, well, because we're IBM. That meeting lasted 4.5 minutes, and he signed a contract with Honeywell 3 minutes later. They forgot the part that they were not writing the check. The big dude on the corner with a loose tie was writing the check. They missed the entire salesy thing. We needed to be resold. Because, by the way, what the company bought, Honeywell did twice the work to get the business and to keep it. And by the way, the processing was so linear, it was not bells and whistles, and we're not going to blow up, and we didn't have nuclear reactors. This was a big old insurance company. In fact, the biggest in California at the time. So being salesy, I've met one salesman who I thought in my life of billions of dollars of business, who's not at all salesy. And you and I talk about this. In fact, he's one of our expert contributors. Rowan. Rowan's not salesy, but that is the best prepared, most linearly prepared salesperson I have ever met. By the time he walks in there, he understands exactly, to the extent he can, what your needs are, what your concerns are, what the failures are. And his presentation, halfway through there, you're sitting and saying, this guy got us. Not only got us, but he's going to get us going forward. I believe that he sells, and he sells at a very high level. Halfway through a pitch, the rest is cherry on top of the ice cream. So he's not salesy, but he is uniquely prepared. Just unique. Everybody else that I've seen that I thought were phenomenal had that understood that what makes us happy is the process, not the end goal. We all know the end goal. We're going to buy 29,000 of those at X dollars a pop. That's the end goal. We all know that. How we get there, the process is what makes you happy or unhappy.
So quick question. So does he ask lots and lots of people what the problems are? And what they want? How does he do the research so that he is prepared for this?
Well, I'll tell you about him, and I'll tell you about me. And forgive the lack of humility. But early on in my career, I was the biggest buyer and seller of direct response media around. And we were a privately held company. We held the company very close to the vest. We talked to no one. Confidentiality was a very hardcore concept in the company I grew up in. So how do you go out and have 50 meetings in 3 days at an event, and each and every one of you are selling and buying at the unenviable or enviable position of buying and selling to the same people? But when you're the biggest, you can't avoid it. So how do I do that without telling them who we are? Because we didn't make sense as a company. DMB said we were doing $25 million out of a 10,000 square foot window. then how come I was the biggest buyer in media and in the industry? That doesn't work. You know, and people talk. My prospect, everybody wanted to know what the secret sauce was. My study was as much as I could find out about my prospect, and then everything I could find out about their direct competitors. Because the most important thing to just about all of us is, how are we doing? What are we doing? What are our competitors doing to do so well? I would sit in a one-hour meeting, and 75% of my time was spent on asking some questions. I saw you guys are doing this. And then I would weave in what I learned about their industry and certainly the competitors. That was really my value add. And there's a few minutes left to, well, you know, what I was selling. And within the framework, what I could say or could not say, very narrow. And my value was, and I gave him information about things really important to them. Okay. Now, Pat will do the same thing. And then he will ask all the appropriate questions. Nathaniel, we're going to have a meeting a week from blah, blah. I have some questions. Now, if he didn't get an RFP from your request for proposal, he will develop one. Let me ask you about this. This is we do this. What fits in the formula here? And you know what? You say, yeah, this will make the meeting better. And you provide it. Plenty for him to develop what he needs to do. Because he's an ultimate professional, you know. So, hey, listen, you and I talk about this endlessly. There's no substitute for homework. How much homework do you do? Not enough. And then you do some more. It's the same whether you're selling shoes or whether you're selling automobiles or Russian spy satellites or Western Europe. I haven't sold shoes, but I've done the others. So, again, it's like everything else. You have to frame the project. You have to understand what's important, what's not.
I just want to dig a second into the value add, because I think that you make a very interesting point there. Because if you are adding extra value during that sales process, you really hardly even need to sell, because the value that you're delivering within that hour, half hour, however many meetings, if you're giving them really, really important information on their competitors, mm-hmm. that they don't know, right? Or they've forgotten, or they don't think is important, or someone else might know in their business. But if you're giving them that information.
It is as long as you, well, first of all, you have to be able to deliver value, period. Yes, you want this. You want this because everyone seems to. It fits well with your formula. We can provide the service. We can provide the product, the service, the follow-up, all of that we can provide, and then we're going to be competitive. Now, a very specific point on talking about the business there and competitors. Never talk down a competitor. Never reveal stuff that they can't find out on their own if they want to. Because the last thing I want is the guy said, gee, so you're going to go talk to my competitors about us? So in that conversation, make it very clear that you may want to ask more questions about our media, but please understand there's a limit to what I can talk about. Confidential is a hardcore concept for us. Much the same way as you will not see me speak at the next convention about you or anyone else. I talk in generalities that are relevant to people. So you don't want to want your client to walk away and say, geez, the guy's just going to go talk to everybody else about me. No, I'm not. On the contrary. And the value add goes beyond that. How are we available to you? I remember reacting very negatively at first at the CEO. The company was doing some level of statistical analyses that was focused on de minimis variations of numbers. In other words, I didn't understand it. The reason we didn't do business with them because they told me I would never understand it. Let's write a big check for something we're never going to understand. But then there were four or five people and the CEO. And as I continue saying that, you know what? You'll forgive me. I'm not that smart. So will you explain that to me some more? At some point, the chief technology guy said, regrettably, this is really the highest level statistical whatever, and it's hard to really comprehend. So I said, so you want me to work, do business with you, but I will not understand what we're doing. Well, essentially, yeah. I said, okay. And then there were all these Wharton MBAs and MIT. That was a really cool company. And the CEO said, let me interrupt. And he pulls out a business card and turns it over. He writes down a phone number and he said, Steve, this is my personal cell phone. I don't give this out to anybody. So I couldn't take the calls. But if you ever get stuck and you want somebody to vouch for what we're doing, I have more to lose than anyone else. I'm a majority stockholder. You call me in the middle of the night if you can't sleep. I said to myself, my, that's arrogant. And when they walked out, and I got a call later from the number two guy. I said, so what? I said, if it hadn't been for the business card I got from the dude, I would never talk to you again. You forgot the most elementary thing. You said, well, this is really good for me, but I'll never understand why. So they were back a week later, and they tried to explain to me. And we actually did some business with them, not at this level, because quite frankly, we didn't understand it. But when they brought it down to something we actually could get, it was pretty slick. But for the fact that the guy said, the value add in that whole mess was the CEO said, look, I have more to lose than anybody else. And gang, call me in the middle of the night if you can't sleep. We're doing something for you. You wake me up if you can't sleep. Okay, you need to know, I have more to gain to lose than anyone else. I'm a majority stockholder. So that's a value add that was really weird and under interesting circumstances. You know what? It's an amazing thing when you walk away from a pitch. God knows you and I have been pitched a lot in our lifetimes. We pitched a lot in our lifetimes where you have a pitch and you walk out of there and say to your colleagues, says, I like to do business with those people. Why aren't they better than the other guy? I just think they have more of themselves invested. And those are genuine people. Okay. And were they salesy? You're damn right they were salesy. I enjoyed every minute of it. They tried to make a living just like I am.
Enjoying the process. Mm-hmm. I get it. So back to Yellow Pages. I don't know. People listening to this, they're not going to know what the hell Yellow Pages is, probably, some of them. Yellow Pages was a huge, it was like a phone book, pre-internet. It was basically a book, very thick like this, and it contained phone numbers, addresses, business names, etc., etc. And if you could have a free listing, or you could have a listing which was half page, a page, or a smaller kind of listing that was a featured listing. And to advertise your business, this was a really great place because you'd open the book, you'd look for what you look for, like an electrician in Hazelmere is an example. You'd open the book, you'd find this electrician and you call them and then they would speak to you on the phone and you can arrange, you know, for them to do business, right? But it was actually could be easy to sell, but I think it's the right person easy. I think me knocking on doors and trying to sell that could be very difficult back in the day. And you had an experience with your friend Joe Schaefer, who used to sell this after the riots in Los Angeles in 1960.
Well, it's more than that, if I may, and if I may tell you the story, and then bring it to today, because remember, today we're a different world. Today we're mass marketing. We have all these tools, and before I get to mass marketing, here's a Manningism. To me, selling is a one-to-one event done millions of times. If you ever read any advertising that we created, it sure sounds like I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to you, everybody else. I'm talking to you. I may have mailed, I don't know, a trillion emails, but this is unique. My friend Joe, all 6'4", redhead with a beard and a pipe. I think he slept with a pipe in his mouth. We were kids. I think Joe and I wasted 2 years of college by hustling people on basketball courts and tennis courts. He was an Australian boy, great tennis player. He was even a better basketball player. We needed lunch money. We went to Plummer Park and hustled some people playing 2-on-2 basketball. Now we had lunch money. 1966, I mean, I was a kid. Riots, L.A. riots. Awful. South Central was burning down. Okay, so everybody stayed home except Joe, who said, I got this idea. We should sell door-to-door cosmetics. My God, that's an awful thing. We're kids. He bought a box of cosmetics he picked up in some drugstore. Out we went to South Central, which was half burned down, and we sold cosmetics door-to-door. Hi, ma'am. Want to buy some cosmetics really cheap? Gosh, we did well. Well, that happens to tie into opportunity, recognize it, take advantage, say yes when everybody else says no. Who the heck would go in there and do that? Well, Joe thought it was a hell of a good idea because, you know, there's nobody doing it right now. Nobody. I learned a lesson from Joe. Now, talking about, Joe was on his way to getting a master's in chemistry. Unfortunately, our hustling days kind of interfered a little bit with that. And one day he said to me, you want to go out with me? I'm selling yellow pages. Now, huh? You're a chemist. No, I'm selling yellow pages. Why? Because I'm making, and he told me I was making it. I couldn't believe it. And I'm working 2 days a week. I said, are you kidding? I have to see this. So we go out to North Hollywood, California, which is a lower middle class suburb. It's a little more gentrified now. A couple big streets, a little bitty stores. So he's got this big briefcase, and we walk in a store, and, hi, I'm Joe, I'm with the Yellow Pages. And half the time we got screamed at. Ah, I'm spending so much money, I'm getting nothing. I have a big page in there, I'm getting nothing. And Joseph, I'm here to renew it. Oh, and it, you know, a lot of screaming. And Joe, very quietly, with a pipe in his mouth, say, it's okay. No problem. Do you have a yellow pages? Of course I do. And they dumped the big book in front of him and says, okay, hold on. And slowly it page through. Oh, that is that your ad, your little quarter page? Yeah. And that's like $800. And Joe says, calm down. And rip the page out, crumble it out, and throw it away. Okay, you're no longer in the yellow pages. Now wait a minute. Don't be hasty. So how will people find me? Joseph, well, he's not in the yellow page anymore. Well, wait a minute now. About 90% of the time, we walk out with a more expensive ad. So I learned from Joe the whole notion of, well, first of all, it's a wonderful negotiating technique, which we talk about a lot. You know, the nomenclature is, I care, but not that much. And that's you then chase me to sell you. Bring that to modern day. Because I say that any sales effort worth its weight, I don't care if you mail. Listen, it's Mother's Day in the United States of America this weekend. I shed tears every day for 2 weeks because every Mother's Day for 15 years, I sold millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of flowers online. I was the king of flowers online. Found a little bitty company, grew to be a really big company. I was just an agency. And every single creative, it was exactly what I would have said to Bob or Mary. Hey, Bob, it's Mother's Day. You really need to buy this for your mom. And by the way, here's a great offer for you. And does your mom like chocolates? How about I'll give you a box of chocolates free if you buy this bouquet of beautiful roses. By the way, forget the 12. By 18, still 1999. One-on-one, done a trillion times. I must have mailed a trillion emails for flowers. But the one-on-one, so this man came, whom I know, very successful, they created this amazing platform, a reverse auction platform for an industry vertical that was buying the same kind of services and products. The target audience was 79,000 retailers, small to medium retailers. They were all buying the same stuff and overpaying. So he came up with this amazing reverse auction platform. Fantastic. Which they built out for a lot of money. And then they came back then and they came to me and said, I can't sell it. Well, they had this brilliant idea. They were marketed online and all of that. And the rate of response was nothing. It was really weird. I said, okay, great pitch if you're selling to Fortune 1000, then you're not. You're selling to mainly mom and pops or people who own two or three stores. Well, okay, so I took this very nice man in his Savile Row suit, New York, his $10,000 suit and his alligator shoes and his beautiful alligator briefcase. And I said, now, put 25 contracts in the box. Let's go sell them. What do you mean? Well, I walked that poor man's shoes off for 2 days, from 9 in the morning to 10 at night, up and down all the major streets of Manhattan and the boroughs. And we walked into store after store that was his vertical. And we got these people saying, we don't even know what you're talking about. And I said, okay, well, you know, sooner or later the refrigerator is going to go bad. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go shopping for a refrigerator. And I just spent, oh, my God. I said, well, what if you could negotiate a price? What do you mean? What if you could, okay, I want a refrigerator. Now you have five people wanting to sell you one. And you got the last guy. I can buy it for $2,200. Can you do better? I can do it for $1,800. Would you buy the refrigerator from them? Of course. Sign the contract. Oh, by the way, here's your computer. Now, for 2 days, we must have sold 100 contracts, up and down. And this poor guy couldn't walk, his blisters on his feet. And he said, I never thought, I didn't want to Wharton or Sanford. I never thought I'd be on the street carrying a briefcase selling. I said, it's one-to-one done a million times. And then we went ahead and created a whole program designed specifically to mirror. He and I walk in a store, have a guy saying, who are you and what do you want? And by the way, they sold the controlling interest in the company at launch for more money than you can imagine, because it's clearly a great idea. And now, believe it or not, we sent out email. And then we followed up email, because most of the people didn't have email. Not a problem. We'll give you a computer, now you have email. Oh, good. And the rate of response was beyond belief because it made all the sense in the world. But it came down to selling one-to-one. And we looked at the guy and says, you know, dude, that door looks like it's going away soon. Yeah, I have to get up a new door. It's just too much money. How much? Oh, people want $1,000. What if you could buy it for $500? From who? The same guy wants $1,000. How are you going to do that? Well, we're going to have three other people bidding against him. Well, I can't do that. Well, we can. One-on-one, done a million times. Of course, the highlight of that story is then they went ahead and devalued my options to less than sushi buddy.
Isn't it? The skills that you learn when you're actually speaking to these people face-to-face and you understand what their problems are, it's very interesting. And it's similar to what we do when we speak to all these people who are interested in Monday Influencer and how we can help them. And it's really lovely when we get great testimonials, you know, and that makes all the difference, doesn't it? When you actually get someone who buys from you and your product changes their life. I mean, that's the most exciting thing, really. It really is. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, studying people, understanding what they want, I mean, basically, you're asking questions, aren't you? That's really what you're doing, and finding out what people want and then helping them to buy, right? Like, and this sort of thing about closing, when people talk about closing, closing just gives you a pain in your chest if you're a salesperson. If you think about it, you don't need to close because actually the prospect and the person buying actually closes themselves on the deal because what you've told them has given them so much value. And you know that what you have for sale is going to help them with their lives, right? I mean, that's the most important thing is like delighting the customer, isn't it?
It's always that. And it's amazing once you get that one line and say, gee, thank you so much. I love the man that writes, I kind of knew this, but I really didn't. And then the answer, which you don't want to give is, if I don't push you in a pool, you're never going to swim. And that, of course, is the biggest challenge that those of us who are in the advisory world have. You know, the old story about the horse. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So you know what? The beast needs to drink. The beast knows it has to drink or die. And then you take him to a trough. Horses have an innate attraction to water. They smell it. And you have the beast who's almost going to die, there's a trough of the water, and the beast won't drink. How do you make him drink? Now, that would be the art part of being a consultant. How do you lead the beast to water? The beast knows has to have water. Then how do you make him drink? How do you get that client, that buyer, to see the wisdom in doing what you want them to do? And you have to, it's a very fine mechanism. When you ask enough questions, draw out enough information, supply enough feedback, where you all of a sudden you see a convergence of need and understanding. And then you develop a goal forward from there. And that's when you have a very happy client who basically developed their path forward with a whole lot of guidance from Schooler or Manning or someone else. And that is the happiest part of a consulting environment because then the client believes you really understand them very, very well. Yeah, well, you told me what I needed to know. Of course I understand. You know, and some of the feedback that you get is, you know, we should have done this a long time ago. Or this is a fresh look at the same problem.
Steve, and I'm really looking forward to actually digging deeper into this topic. I think we should certainly talk about this more. I think it's hugely important for people. And if you are listening to this, you haven't heard about Monday Influencer, you need to go to mondayinfluencer.com and go and check that out. It's a great resource for small, medium-sized businesses and for people within corporations that want to get ahead. So thank you, Steve. It's been
great.
Thank
you, Matt.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.